little bit about me. I'm 59 years old now. I was 56th time when I had my experience working in a professional environment for a company called GBS Corp, George Baker Sam. It's a high-tech productivity firm based in Ohio. We have accounts nationally, internationally, whether it be marketing, IT technology, cloud services, hosting, software support services, document imaging. Really a dynamic organization that I spent 35 years in, working all the way from initial customer service to the executive vice president reporting to the CEO. It was a wonderful career, wonderful job, incredible work family. I'm married. I've been married for 34 years to my wife named Teresa. I have two kids, Marie, 23, and Joey, 19. Joey's in school. Marie works in healthcare industry and medical billing, and live in Canfield, Ohio. I had the opportunity to speak at the IANS conference, I believe, in over Labor Day weekend. And that's, you know, where Martin and I met for the opportunity to have today's conversation. I'm a very driven individual. As the EVP of the company, I was responsible for all the profit loss, the sales, the results, the performance of the division, which I led with a great team of people. They truly were like family to me. I have background. I have a hobby in cooking. Had a barbecue business for about 30 years. I did catering. It was for sort of a ministry type food service where, you know, I enjoyed meeting people, helping, and, you know, just trying to lift people up through food, kind of bring them to the table, so to speak. Grew up in a normal environment, great hardworking parents. My mother really never did work. My dad worked as a seventh level supervisor for General Motors and ran a small construction business throughout his entire life, retired at 50 years old. They're both still alive and get to see them every day. So I'm very thankful for that, and we live about a mile apart. So essentially I just painted a picture of what seemed to be a perfect life for me and everything that was, you know, anticipated was provided, which is absolutely amazing. I've always felt blessed my whole life. I just didn't know why. 3 years ago on today's date, after being sick for weeks, and I would say 2 to 3 weeks, I was fighting off something that just kept getting worse and worse and didn't know what it was. And looking back, ultimately, it looks like I contracted COVID either coming back from a wedding from Charleston on a plane where an individual got really sick on a plane. And I happened to be sitting in a front corner seat near the door, and they wouldn't let us park the plane. They had to bring a medical crew in to get an individual off the plane that was a middle-aged person, couldn't walk, couldn't function, and he fell right into my lap getting off that plane, coughing right into my face. So it's possible I caught it there and didn't realize it. Or I went to a fundraiser for the Junior Women's League a few weeks after that, and it turns out that 20 people at that event came down with it, and sadly, one of the women who were leading the event passed away due to COVID. I don't know whether I brought COVID to that event or not, but it's possible. So I, sad day, just in reflection. Anyhow, I got Friday, came home from work. I was totally wiped out. I was doing this every day, coming home, totally wiped out. Managed to go out to dinner with some friends. Saturday morning, I woke up. I couldn't open my eyes. I was miserably sick, and it just something I've never felt taking over, where I was coughing, couldn't breathe, couldn't concentrate, couldn't see barely, because I couldn't open my eyes, so weak. I stayed home battling that all the way until Thursday. I believe that was the 23rd March of 2020. There was not much experience in COVID at that time. It was talked about, but no one really knew anything about it. I did go to an urgent care, and they had sent me home. They didn't have any tests and didn't know what it was. So I was probably just dehydrated. So finally, after 4 days of this, my wife just demanded that I go to the hospital. Went, managed to get a shower, went into the hospital, collapsed as I entered the emergency right on the floor. And from there, the whirlwind of care began. They had brought me in, checked me again, said I was probably dehydrated and were going to send me home. And my wife said, there's something drastically wrong. He's never been sick like this. So could he at least stay overnight and you could check him? And progressively each day, I got worse and worse and worse. My fever started spiking to the point of 104 degrees for about 14, 15 days. I was packed in ice. My kidneys began to fail. I was placed on dual dialysis. Heart was going into AFib. And systematically, I was just declining and every organ was starting to be attacked. I'd gotten to the point where my kidneys had failed. My liver was just about failed. My heart was in AFib. And I was starting to bleed. And that's, at the time, didn't realize, but a very small percentage of COVID patients get a gastric version of it where it attacks their intestines, and it did that to me. I started to bleed and they didn't know how to stop it and started getting progressively worse. They at this time moved me into ICU. I was intubated. I was on intubation for 21 days. Extremely sick, obviously. At that point, they knock you out and paralyze you. And I was losing blood. I was getting continuous transfusions, exhausting all the blood in the blood banks here in Youngstown, Ohio, near Canfield, to the point they were going to Cleveland and Pittsburgh to get blood for me. I had about 5 surgeries throughout that process, trying to stop the bleeding. It wouldn't stop. Tried every experimental drug there was for COVID and everything at that time. They just didn't know how to do really much of anything at the time. I moved through 3 hospitals, 2 locally, and eventually I got to the point where I was going to be life flighted to Cleveland Clinic. That's when everything actually began as far as my experience. I remember that they brought me up out of sedation enough to get me on the gurney to be put on the helicopter, life flight helicopter. I was still intubated at the time, and they had a full team go fly with me. I just had another surgery where they're trying to stop the bleeding. My lungs were completely filled with COVID glass with about a 5% capacity. And that night they called home and told my family that we know you've been praying. And at this point you might want to stop praying, because if for some reason, some miracle or otherwise, medical or otherwise, Jeff lives, he's not going to come home the same person. We're talking about at this point with the lack of oxygen, the high temperature, all the other issues going on medically, he'd be relegated to a wheelchair, a feeding tube with brain damage, never walk again, and probably never be able to talk. So my family stayed strong. My wife was, you know, continuing to pray, and my family was praying. I literally had people praying all over the place. I've come to find that out later. Anyways, they put me in the helicopter, and that would have been a Thursday night. At that time, I had an experience between then and Saturday morning. Saturday morning, I was on a Zoom call with my family like almost nothing happened. And now I'll tell you how that occurred. I was in the helicopter or in the Cleveland Clinic at the time, I'm not sure where. And I was in the hospital, still extremely sick. And I knew I was that sick, just didn't know I was ready to expire. And my parents, mom and dad, who are both still alive today, appeared in front of me. And they were standing a little bit off to my left, but in front of me. And they said, Jeff, if you've had enough, it's okay if you want to go. And I said, okay. And at this point, I felt like I was out of my hospital room. And I said, okay, where do you want me to go? And my dad didn't answer me, which was odd. And he just said, it's just okay. Everything's taken care of. Talk to Teresa and the kids. Everything's okay. If you've had enough, if you're done and you have to go, it's okay if you want to go. And I said, okay, well, where do you want me to go? Still no answer. My wife appeared next to them with the kids back behind her. And they said, well, Teresa, let him know that it's okay if he's got to go and that everything's going to be okay. And she started to cry and she said, it's okay if you want to go, but if you keep fighting, keep fighting. And I said, okay, guys, as I'm a little perturbed. I go, I'm in the hospital. Where do you want me to go? And my dad gives me the look and he can't answer the question. And he says, I think you need to talk to him. And he pointed off to my right like this. And as I started to turn, the most incredible thing in my entire life ever that could ever happen happened. And I was immediately enveloped and sitting right in God's arms, right in Jesus' lap. And I knew instantaneously who I was with. He knew me. I knew everything was okay. I had zero pain, no problems. It hit me like a ton of bricks that it was all true. Everything was true. And I just felt an amazing peace. I still wanted to know where go meant. I was hugging him. He was hugging me close. Felt like a little kid on Santa Claus's lap. And I actually was a little kid at this point. I'll explain that as I looked down and I was wearing this little striped shirt that when I, last time I had that on, little striped t-shirt, I was 5 years old in a really bad car accident. And it was covered completely in blood in that car accident. And it was perfectly clean, like the day that I had it when I was a little kid. And he said, Jeff, you're really sick. And if you want to come home with me, it's okay. But if you want to stay, it's okay too. And I kept looking over his shoulder to see where go meant. And I could see out above the clouds what it looked like to me, were the gates of heaven. And there was things going on in the background. And everything was perfect. And I was like, oh my gosh, I knew that I could go and everything was fine. I wasn't worried about dying. I wasn't worried about anything. And I said to him, are you sure it's okay if I stay? Because I was like afraid of making the wrong choice in his eyes. And he chuckled and he says, you do know who you're with, don't you? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, it's okay. You'll do good things for me either place. It's okay if you want to stay here or come home with me. And I said, then I'll stay if it's okay. And the next thing that I remember was Saturday morning now. Keep in mind, 30 hours X later of being pretty much coded near death, everything wrong you could possibly have wrong. And I'm on a Zoom call from the Cleveland Clinic with my family for the first time in 2 months. Able to communicate, understand them, know what was going on. And my x-rays of my lungs were clear. I was still recovering. I had a lot of things wrong. A lot of surgeries took place during this process of being sick. But I was thrilled and I knew that he had saved me and gave me the opportunity to come back here. And what made me make that choice was, I remember when my wife said, if you can keep fighting, keep fighting. So I vividly remembered that while I was on his lap. And that's why I said I would stay, because I really knew that she was needed me and wanted me to stay. So that was the reason for the choice. I was so thrilled the next several days, and they got me from that ICU into a regular room. I had validated my timeline and like what I thought happened, because I remember being put in a helicopter, all those things. And I began talking to the nurses and so excitedly sharing what happened to me. I was telling them about my experience, and I was praying with them and just so thankful and overcome with joy. I really couldn't contain myself, to tell you the truth. It was an experience like I can't explain. Completely thrilled. And I had breakthroughs of some of these nurses. These poor nurses were working, and the doctors, everybody in healthcare at the time was working double duty. The entire Cleveland Clinic was closed except for three floors of COVID patients at the time. And I experienced that as they would wheel me through the hospital to get CAT scans and MRIs and different things for my inside, the damage that was in my intestines and all the other things. Throughout that time, there were breakthroughs of some of the nurses, and they would tell me that, boy, they needed to get closer in their faith, and they've gotten away from God, and they just couldn't believe what happened to me. Though they believed it, they were crying in tears of joy and recommitting themselves, which was making me feel great, because I just wanted to share the story. And it's knowing me, something I've never done before. So I was recuperating, started there. About a week later, I'm now to the point where I'm desperate to go home. I just can't, I just have to go home. I've been literally in isolation for that entire time. It was so scary of a time for the people that worked in the hospitals. They wouldn't come in your room. You know, you didn't know really anything that was going on. I was totally, not in communication. I didn't even realize there was a shutdown. You know, I remember asking one of the nurses what they do after work, and she said nothing. I'm like, what do you mean nothing? You get everything to do. You're in Cleveland. She says, everything's closed. And I didn't realize that. So I was, completely unaware. But being that I was desperate to go home, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, one of these nights, a gentleman appeared in front of me, similar to what happened with my parents, but this person was completely well-dressed, dark skin, dark frame glasses, super ultra professional, dark gray suit. And I literally thought the CEO of the hospital had came to see me. And I thought, well, I'm going home. They're going to just tell me what I have to do, and I'll be able to get home. And he said, so here you want to go home? I said, like, you have no idea. And he says, well, I can help you with that. And I was like, oh, this is great. What do I have to do? And he says, no, not much. And I thought that was a little bit of a strange answer. And I said, well, you want to go home, right? Yeah. He goes, well, I can get you out of here right away. And I was totally excited and pumped up about that. I said, but what do I have to do? I didn't know whether I had to fill out papers, prove I could do something. I couldn't walk. I literally had to go through rehab for months to be able to walk again. And, he said, really honest, just a couple small things to start out, but nothing big. I'll get you home right away. And I said, okay, like what? He said, well, nothing big, but for starters, you can stop talking all that God nonsense and praying with the nurses. And I immediately knew who was standing in front of me. And I said, leave me alone. Please leave me alone. I will not follow you. Please leave me alone. And he said, are you sure? I said, yes. Please leave me alone. And he faded away. And I was terrified. I was shaken to the core. I couldn't believe what just happened to me, the temptation to go home to what I believe was selling my soul. And keep in mind, I was getting better, ready to go, be released one of these days. And the next morning I wake up, I'm bleeding again. My vitals are now off the charts again. new IVs are being installed, a PICC line is put in. Everything was going the wrong direction again. And 3 o'clock in the morning that next night, same gentleman appears and says, I see you're sick again. He says, I see you're sick again. Do you have time to think about what we talked about? And I said, yes. I said, yes. I says, I will not follow you, live or die. I will not follow you. I follow Jesus. And you have to understand, thousands of people have been praying for me, and I felt the prayers. Jesus was there for me when I was ready to die, with no strings attached, nothing. I had to do nothing. He came and helped me. You're looking for me, and I have to do things for you to help me. So please leave me alone. I will not follow you. And he faded away. And at that moment, I really felt like he accepted the reality that Christ won. And he gave me the strength by which to reject an ultimate temptation of getting out of the hospital. I was thrilled that I felt like he finally accepted that and left me. I actually stayed up until 7 a.m. to make a phone call to my boss, the CEO of GBS, who's a very spiritual person, and tell him what happened in real time, because I was just so confident that God got me through another storm. And I was completely thrilled. Throughout this entire time in the hospital, my room was being tended to by a gentleman, an African-American gentleman. Every day would come in and clean my room, and he'd sweep and mop. He'd never talk to me, and I'd always try to say some small whisper to him. I couldn't really talk too well. And he just never acknowledged me, and he'd just sweep and mop and sweep and mop and clean. And a day before I was released and to go to a rehab center, Edwin Shaw, to walk, you know, talk, all the different things that I needed to improve on. He came in my room and he started to sweep and mop and clean. And he walked over to my bedside, stared straight into my eyes, sunk me in the pillow with his eyes, and leaned on his broom or mop handle. And all he did is stared at me and he said, keep the faith, brother. Keep the faith. God has a plan for you. Now I'm telling you flat out, no possible way he knew what was going on to say those things to me. And I felt like God was speaking through him to me and saying, I'm still here. I got you, like I have had you your whole life. I realized that through all the times of my life, the time when I was sitting on Jesus' lap, when that gentleman was looking me in the eyes, telling me to keep the faith, that bulletproof feeling, that invincible feeling that I've always gotten through the toughest times of my entire life unscathed, that God was helping me and carrying me, and it's been a blessing forever. So when he left the room, I really prayed hard and was thanking God for everything that he did. And I told him that day in my through prayer, and I felt like conversation was that I said, Lord, if you ever want me to do anything with this experience, I'll do it if it comes from you. But I won't do anything on my own. I won't seek to share the story. I won't seek to benefit from it in any way. I won't seek to do any of that. But if I know you send it to me, whether it be an interview, a conversation like tonight, then I'll know it's from you and I'll do it. And ever since that day, I've been inundated with emails, conversation, phone calls, interviews. They've written books. Fox News had a crew here for 2 days and did a story, and they posted some type of a interview / documentary, which I haven't seen, on Fox Nation called Beyond and Back, 2 Hours to Live. That was when they had called my house and family and told, you know, don't continue to pray because you won't want what you're going to get back. That was the 2 Hours to Live scenario. So what started out to be an extremely tough time with the really debilitating illness at the time, the first round of COVID was really bad. I mean, we lost so many people. I lost a really good friend of mine in ICU on the first few, first week or so that I was in the hospital, and no one even told me that. We didn't see each other before it, so it wasn't like we gave it to each other, but they didn't tell me till I actually got home, because a friend for years and years, they didn't want to get me upset in the hospital. So it was a tough thing, but I'll tell you, from my perspective, it's been a complete blessing. Having the opportunity to talk with folks, learn from others, realize that this whole NDE thing is much more real than what I ever even knew about. And happening to me, I couldn't tell you what or why. But I'm blessed as a result. And, you know, if you have any questions, I'm willing to take them. You know, since I've had that experience, as a very strong A-type personality in the business world, driving, producing, I loved the challenge, the love, stress. I thrived on it. Now, I've got a complete different perspective. I have a high level of compassion, especially for animals, for some reason. And I think it's the fact that they truly depend on, you know, us and others to take care of them. And I start looking at that and I think, oh my gosh, if we could just rely on God as He asks us to do, you know, maybe we'd be all better off. And I look at pets and animals and different things like that, and I have a high level of compassion for somebody in need, or, you know, someone that's in a service position who's working hard to make a living and trying to help serve others, no matter what it is, whether it's a waitress, someone helping with, you know, yard work, it doesn't matter. I do my very best to make sure that I do the best in A, trying to pay them, B, thank them, C, lend a hand, and just lift them up and congratulate them for all the work that they're doing serving somebody else. And so I've changed in that perspective. I've completely lost any fear of dying. There was zero pain when I was in that situation. There was up to that moment, I mean, before that time, but I realized that everything was perfect. There was no fear, there was no stress, there was everything perfect. I felt completely at home. It's an incredible experience. So I've been blessed and I'm thankful for it. So that's kind of the story, folks. That's what happened.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
And if anybody does have any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them for them.
Okay, so for the people who are online, ask your questions through the chat. And for people who are here, you can come up to the microphone. Anybody?
I'm wondering if he saw anyone else besides you. Did he see any other people on the other side? Jeff might not have heard that, but he was asking if he saw anyone else
besides Jesus in your experience.
Not when I was in that situation. I was in the hospital, and when my parents appeared, I had transitioned out of being actually laying in hospital to more or less being, I'll say, in a hallway area that they were able to stand in front of me. And when I was pulled into God's lap, I was in a really high wooden walled room. It was a nice big high walled room, real lavish. And I was able to look out over the clouds and what appeared to me be heaven in the background, heaven's gates type thing. And there was things going on in that background and everything was perfect. I just felt completely at home. But I didn't see anybody other than being with God at the time.
How has your family reacted to your experience?
You know, it was incredible. And I've heard since my experience that some people have kind of a different experience. I had extreme support from umpteen numerous people, including my family, of what happened. Obviously, we don't know each other, but you know, I have no reason to share this story. People say, "Well, are you sure it wasn't a dream?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I had tons of dreams, but they're fragmented bits and pieces, and all these different things that, you know, I could share some bits and pieces of what I experienced in dreams. This was not a dream. It was real, tangible, consistent through from beginning to end, and a complete." With multiple experiences after the actual episode, you know, when I was being life-flighted or moved right into Cleveland Clinic. My family was extremely supportive, my wife and kids, they have been. I had clergy support. I've had tremendous support. I wasn't afraid to share it with my entire team at work. I've done that. So no, I haven't received any kind of backlash or anything like that. Great support.
Okay. Get that microphone right there. the big one. The camera.
The question that I have is, what was your parents' and your wife's response when you told them of that experience, when they were telling you it was okay for you to stay or go? What was their response to you after all of this?
Well, my parents didn't say that. My parents and my wife, they were only telling me it was okay to go. It was okay if I wanted to pass. They weren't. It was Jesus that gave me the opportunity of choice, where he explained I was really sick, and that if I wanted to come home with him, I could, or if I wanted to stay, I could. And that's when I had that shirt, and I remembered what my wife said, and I asked him if it was okay if I stayed, meaning here. And he said, yeah, you know, but chuckling, like I said, you know who you're talking to, right? So but sharing, if you mean after I told them what happened, and I told Craig this, my mom had been posting things on her Facebook page, and she's not a very verbal person as far as her writing type person, but for some reason when I got sick, she started putting everything out there, mainly for the reason to keep consistency so there wasn't a rumor mill going on. And you know, I had a lot of people, a lot of responsibility at work, and they wanted to know what was going on. So she was sharing everything. And at one point in her story, and I only found this out obviously after I got home, she had put that it seems like I'm in God's lap. Well, I didn't get what happened to me from her story, because I had already explained what happened to me before I even knew she posted that. So the coincidental postings that she had were incredible. And that's only after the fact that I even know that was done. Good question.
So Jeff, how are you different after your experience? And we have a couple of people online who want to ask some questions too.
That's fine. Well, I retired. I was not able to continue the position that I had. I had a lot of responsibility in my position. There are some challenges that I experienced as a result of having COVID. You can hear my voice, some small memory things that, and I'll say real time, working on massive spreadsheets and things I used to do with my eyes closed takes me forever now. I'll get it done, but it's so much slower. But my level of compassion is really amazing. I was such a type A driven personality. And I may have some of that still in me, but I'm much more understanding. I do have I'd say one of the things that I noticed that I don't like is sometimes my patience is not as good as it should be. But it probably always was that way, and I just didn't realize it or care about it. So it bothers me now if I'm less patient than I think I should be. So.
Good. Lauren, you're online. You can unmute and ask a question.
Still muted.
He's still muted. I'm not sure he can unmute. Lauren, just put your question in the chat if you could. And here's another one. So when you were on Jesus' lap and you saw activity in heaven, you describe what kind of activity you saw.
I'll say for lack of better words, beings in motion and moving, and they were communicating, but it was all fluid. Everything was just like it's supposed to be. And it's hard, you know, when I say that, it sounds kind of corny, but it just looked like that's a good place to go and I'm fine. It's okay if I go. But I also had a very strong feeling that I was going to find people or spirits or whatever. I don't know what I would get when I actually went through there. But I just felt like if I go, I am going to be extremely happy, okay. And I know that whoever I'm going to be there with is going to be perfect. It was everything was perfect. The activity was community, and there were things happening. If there was activities, interaction between beings.
And do you feel closer to Heavenly Father now than prior to your NDE?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't feel like I'm different or special. Let me put that out front. I feel that the real message in this whole thing was for me to survive, and I did. But the real opportunity was for me to make sure that people understood the power of prayer. And when I came home, I had a reception and people were spaced out. I was outside in a parking lot of over 400 people in a school parking lot. Excuse me. I'm not coughing. It's my vocal cord. A quick sip. They had ribbons hanging in all the neighbors' yards and trees and mailboxes and literally all around town here and across like different parts of the country where, you know, people I had relationships and contacts with. So the prayer circle that I had was insane, very powerful. And when people say I had this miracle experience and they go, a lot of times people will say, I wish I had something like that. And I said, well, did you pray for me? And they're like, oh my gosh, all the time. And I don't even pray much. And I said, well, you actually had the experience. All I am is a messenger to come back and let you know that your prayers were heard, acted on as you asked. And I'm here just to validate it. That's all because I was perfect either way. It wasn't about me. It was about the opportunity to make sure people knew. That's the true message of this whole thing for me, is the power of prayer, and that I was able to validate it took place.
It's not this one, it's this one.
Thank you for sharing. We appreciate the message of the true power of prayer. And I've got two questions for you. First of all, when your parents appeared to you and said, it's okay to go, were they in the flesh or are they in the spirit when you were in the hall?
They were in the flesh as far as, you know, the vision to me. My they were plain as day, my parents, you know, fully dressed and acting as my parents, familiar clothes on that I recognized.
But they weren't really your parents.
No, it was a vision. There was nobody visiting anybody in the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, right. That's a great question. I'm glad if you cleared that up.
Second question. The man in the dark suit and mm-hmm. Jesus, did they look similar, like brothers?
Not even close, no.
Thank you.
No.
And who was the guy in the suit?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, to me, I'm not going to say I can tell you it was the devil. It was something evil. Okay. And perfectly dressed. And you got to realize my background in business, that would have been something I'd align to. It was deceiving. It was, to me, I thought the CEO of the hospital was coming to see me because people, the nurses and doctors were at that time telling me, because I was getting interviewed every day. They've written medical journal articles on me about the COVID ulcers that I had and the bleeding and everything else. That they, and that those are legitimate articles posted in Medicine, of the small number of cases that were like mine. The three that I was aware of at the time, one of the persons died in the article that they published, Journal Medicine, that they gave me a copy of. Me and another person had went to a nursing home with severe problems. So that the doctors and nurses were telling me the whole time that they keep interviewing me and asking me all these questions because I was the only one that at that time had survived with about a case of COVID as I had.
Thank you so much for testifying of your story and of Jesus Christ. I noticed that the adversary does not want you to testify of Christ or your story. So thank you for being brave and doing so, and the humility to be able to testify whenever you're called upon. My question is, since you've been back, have you felt the senses be heightened or spiritual gifts show more since you've had a near-death experience?
I feel like I can tell when there's something genuine being put in front of me. And what I mean by that is I've been contacted by people all over the world on an individual basis. And they're not calling me about, back in the day, it was a lot of COVID, but they're calling me about their faith being broken. And I talked to them about the prayer, power of prayer. There's people calling me about they're in the middle of a divorce and don't know where to go, trying to lead them, you know, into their inner self through prayer, to pray to Christ. The gifts, I feel like some of the times that he just keeps continuing to deliver more that I can do to help him. And I'm willing to accept it. And it seems like every time I say I'm willing to accept it, he takes me up on that offer. So I just do, you know, what I feel is the best I can do. I'm not a Bible verse person where I could start citing Bible verses and use that. I can only use real world life experience that I've had and those things. So I'm probably not good for someone that wants to come and get, I'll say, a theology perspective on things. But I'm comfortable where I may not have been before speaking about everything that he offers us.
I was just wondering if you're feeling like some of your gifts have been heightened since you came back from the other
side. Yes, I do. But I can't explain it in detail, like why or how I feel, but I do not feel like I'm different or special than anybody else. I feel like we all have the capability. He just helped expose it in me.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Oh. I actually like the dialogue, folks. I learn from the questions and, sometimes just telling a story isn't as good as interacting and sharing with others. So I do appreciate the questions.
We got a great audience here. And all right.
and they have enjoyed your talk. And I think now is about the end. So
hey, I'll give you guys one other thing to ponder on. And I forgot to mention this. After this experience and sharing it, and I, like some of the local news channels did interviews and those things, well, ultimately I was contacted by Lee Whitting's associate producer, Lilia. And she found me through prayer. She called me one day and she says, I've been trying to find someone that had an experience from COVID and I can't do it. And I went to bed and she was ready to fall asleep. And she felt like she was prodded to get up, go back to the computer. She did. And she found my news story. I think the one that you shared in from Cleveland, and contacted me. Anyways, in sharing those stories, it has created such a platform for me that it followed up on that day of prayer that I had right in the hospital where I said, God, if you bring it to me, she was calling me and that's how all this kind of got started, based upon a simple interview. I've done not one thing since that day, but I haven't stopped talking to people about it. So I think that God's capabilities, to follow up on that last question, is really just through us and everybody else's experience. But I did come home. She said, God's probably cured you in more ways, healed you in more ways than you realize. And only did I realize 2 months later when I went to the eye doctor. I wore glasses and contacts since I was 8 years old. I don't have those in, and I don't wear glasses, and I have 20/20 vision now. Don't ask me how.
Well, Jeff, that's great. We also had a question about, do you have any books or videos?
Guidepost magazine did contact me and write and do a book. It's published in the Guidepost series. I don't even know I'll tell you the name in a second. I don't do a lot of stuff on myself. I'm not a prideful person. I haven't even watched a Fox special on the Fox Nation, you know, of me. But hang on a second, I'll tell you what it is. Just one second.
And there's a video by Lee Whitting, and we'll share that on the internet on our webpage.
Here's the book right there.
Oh.
I'm one of, I think, five stories, but a pretty lengthy story in the book that they had published about that. I interviewed with Lee Whitting, that's on YouTube, and Julie Hedenborg. She has a podcast called Everyday Miracles. I did, you know, that. With her, and I was on Spirit Daily, a couple different radio shows, national radio shows. I think Eric Bennett out of Utah does a podcast, Salt Lake City. I talked to him. But again, I know I keep stressing this, but I'm not out looking to do those things. If it comes and it's genuine, then I'll do it. I just want to fulfill what I promised I would do. Just keep the faith. Share the power of prayer and continue to be thankful for all the blessings that he's given me.
Thank you very much. That was great. And we very much appreciate you taking the time today.
Yes, same here. It was great talking with everybody. And if you do need to get a hold of me, I'm sure Martin can share that with you. I have no problems talking to someone one-on-one.
Okay. Thank you again. We're gonna
Thanks.